Today, we begin our fifth year together. We do so in a new home, on a new day, at a new time. Other than that, everything's the same. I think it's a good thing to shake things up every 5 years or so. It's a reminder not to get too set in our ways. A reminder that life happens. And change is very much a part of life. For some of us, it has truly been a summer of change. One of us got married. One of us had a child. Yet with all this change, here we are. And perhaps it's a good chance to reflect on why we're here. This is not the cosmic, why are we here, but rather more the specific. Why are we here? Particularly on such a beautiful day, why do we come together twice a month, both to celebrate our diversity as well as our common humanity? At our retreat last month, I was asked to give a sermon sometime this year on an interfaith life and what it would mean. It seems like an excellent topic for this, the first service of our fifth year. An interfaith life. We live in a binary world. An increasingly binary world. An either-or world. A them-and-us world. And, of course, computers, no matter how complex they become, are based on a binary world. A switch is on or off, X or O. What fascinates me is that in the race to create AI or artificial intelligence, the truth of it is that we are becoming more like computers, speaking and thinking more like computers, faster than computers are learning to think like us, either on or off. Either or. The day may be coming when we are considered the artificial intelligence of computers. Let's face it, humanity has never found it easy to deal with difference. We like the simplicity of a binary world. You're either one of us or you're one of them. And we are masters at creating whole categories of them. Interfaith changes that paradigm. Interfaith not only accepts nuance, but embraces it. In many ways, this is very, very new. And yet, in so many ways, it is so very, very old. The call to embrace diversity, to embrace our differences, and not as a solemn duty, but with joy. This call is ancient. It has been the call of our spiritual paths from the beginning. Live lives of love, of compassion, and in community with your human family. It is the call of the Bhagavad Gita, the call of Lao Tzu, the call of Jesus, Hillel, the Buddha, and so many, many others. The call continues up to this moment. Love each other. For crying out loud, love each other. And whether this is the call of God, as I believe it is, or the call of cosmic conscience, if you prefer, one has to ask. Well, okay, one doesn't have to ask. But I really wish we would. Why has it been necessary to repeat this call so often in every language, in every culture around the world? I believe the answer is this. The problem isn't pronouncing the call to love. The problem is that while we proclaim it like mad, we so rarely follow through. If interfaith is to be different, that difference will lie not in what we proclaim, but what we do, how we live. An interfaith life requires us to follow through on our faith. The truth of it is that an interfaith life actually lived would look remarkably like a Christian life, and a Jewish life, and a Baha'i life, and a Buddhist life and a Muslim life and a pagan life and a humanist life, if they are lived with the love that is at the foundation of each and every one of them. For interfaith, then, what counts is how we translate what we believe into how we live. This is why, this is truly why our congregation can hold humanists, Buddhists, Christians, Muslims, and so many others as we joyfully, joyfully share of ourselves with one another. But if you've been coming for any length of time, you already knew that. What does it look like? I hear you thinking. I read minds now. What does it look like? What does an interfaith life look like? Examples, please. An interfaith life requires a commitment to sharing. One of the most deeply personal things we can do is to share who we are spiritually. The gift of interfaith, if we will live it, is to be able to share who we are without the burden of defending our beliefs or the arrogance of demanding that others give up their belief to embrace ours. This is interfaith at the ground level. Interfaith is concerned with how we act and that we act with love, compassion, and in community. Interfaith assures us, perhaps reassures us, that our individual beliefs are important. None of us would be who we are if we did not believe what we believe. But as a human community, what counts is what we do with those beliefs. Whatever our beliefs, whatever our spiritual paths, do they lead us to the mountaintop of a life lived with love, compassion, and community? What interfaith says is that if your spiritual path is the path of Jesus, and it leads you to live a life of love, compassion, and community, then please come, share it, and let us celebrate the Christian path together. And if your path, your spiritual path, is the path of the Buddha, and it leads you to live a life of love, compassion, and community, then please come, share it, and let us celebrate the Buddhist path together. And the Muslim path, and the Hindu path, and the Baha'i path, and the pagan path, and the Jewish path, and the humanist path, and the, hey, I'm still seeking path. We celebrate the oneness of our humanity, not the oneness of our spiritual paths. As we seek to live an interfaith life, the word human is important. Because to be human is to be fallible. We make mistakes, all of us, all of us. I was reminded of this in my own life just yesterday. To live an interfaith life is not to be perfect, but it is to get up every morning, well, okay, almost every morning, with the goal of embracing love, compassion, and community, not accepting, not tolerating, but embracing. Know them. We seek to excise putting anyone into the category of them. Not that we'll always succeed. We're human. We screw up. But always we return to the goal that there is no them. This is why interfaith is not only a spiritual practice, but not only a spiritual path, but a spiritual practice. Now they say practice makes perfect. Nah. But practice, daily practice, sincerely entered into, does, over time, make better. I would offer that our goal should be better. Not perfect. Better. Sometimes incrementally, with tiny little steps, but better. What are some of the differences between an interfaith life and life as our culture currently practices it? One of the most basic is remembering, even in the face of adversity, our common humanity. That includes the person who cuts us off in traffic, as well as the person whose politics seems so completely off the wall, at least from our perspective. It doesn't mean we'll agree, but it does mean respecting the humanity, even and especially, of the person with whom we disagree. This, in case you haven't noticed, is a dramatic shift from what passes these days for discourse. If I were granted just one wish for the people of Israel and Gaza, just as one example of far, far too many, it would be for all sides to understand and truly embrace our common humanity. Every death, everywhere, is the extinction of a human being. And yet, we have grown so very careless in our extinction of human lives. This brings us back to a basic truth. If love and compassion were easy, or just modestly difficult, we wouldn't be where we are. These thousands of years after Jesus and Moses and the Buddha and Muhammad, and now after over 100 years after Baha'u'llah. Love, compassion, and community are not easy. Me is easy. We is hard. Particularly when we are stressed, when times are difficult, we retreat to the prison of me. Fear enslaves us and makes us so very small. We become so small that we cannot even listen to each other. And if we cannot listen, compassion dies. One crucial aspect of compassion, if not its foundation, is listening, truly listening, when another person speaks. Yet, listening is not something our culture bothers to teach us. If we would practice interfaith, one thing we need to do is observe our reaction, our own reaction, when someone else speaks to us. Are we listening to what that person is actually saying? Or are we already, even before they are through with the first sentence, thinking about what our reply will be? The perfect zinger. I would suggest that learning to listen, what some have called compassionate listening, is a crucial, indeed foundational, aspect of living an interfaith life. Compassion is an interesting word. Compassion involves, as our first peoples have put it, a willingness to walk a mile in another person's moccasins, to be willing to see the world from another soul's perspective. That is living an interfaith life. Staying with compassion, among many things, it involves the willingness and ability to forgive. We want to be able to forgive those who have hurt us. especially if the one who hurt us is ourself. Forgiveness does not mean ignore, and forgive does not mean necessarily forget. But much more about that in 2 weeks when we celebrate the Jewish High Holy Days and Yom Kippur. For now, I believe that what is important is to understand that an interfaith life is a life lived with love, compassion, and in community with our human family. This is a goal, not an end. It is a lifelong commitment to a goal that, being human, we know we can never reach. A part of an interfaith life is recognizing and accepting that we can never reach that goal and yet remaining committed to it. If we become dedicated solely to the impossible dream, I believe we lose ourselves. By the same token, if we become dedicated solely to what appears to be practical, I believe we also lose ourselves. To live an interfaith life is to live within the tension of what we hope for and what we can accomplish, never losing sight of either one. May we help each other. May we treat each other with compassion and love as we strive to live an interfaith life. Amen.